It is a wonderful, wonderful presence here. My God, it's a wonderful presence. And it's not one to take lightly, ever. God honors those who honor him and reverence him. And he's here. The presence of the Lord is here, and I'm grateful for that. As we're navigating through this time and all that's going on, the pandemic and everything they're talking about, I look to rely on one thing to be constant, and that's the presence of God. That's the presence of God. If I can sense the tangible presence of God, I'm good. Anybody else know what I'm talking about? Come on, everybody clap. Let's let the folks out there know there are some people in the building. I know that you know that for yourself as well. And it was Moses in dealing with the people of God. At one point, God just said, okay, look, I'm done. Meaning, Moses, I'm going to take you and start all over again. And at one point he said, no, I'm going to let you go on, but I'm going to send an angel with you. I'm not going. Moses said, if you don't go, I'm not going. He made this statement. He said, the only thing that distinguishes us from the other nations is you, your presence. And if you're not with us, he said, then I'm not going. It was Moses' way of saying, God, it's you or nothing. It's you or nothing. And that's where I choose to live. God, it's you or nothing. And so in the midst of everything that's going on, and even as we continue to work and build and plan and navigate, even here at the embassy, I look for the presence of God. I press in for that presence. And that's what helps me to know that God is still working this thing. Yeah. And so this morning, I want to share from a thought that I spoke to just briefly in passing last week, but I want to really emphasize this point because I believe it to be key for many of us in our lives, in seasons of our lives, and for some of you in the season you're in right now. And the thought is this. Well, the overarching thought is still the same. Walking confidently, consistently, and courageously in kingdom authority. Walking confidently, consistently, and courageously in kingdom authority. By the way, I want to welcome our guests. It's good to have you all with us. I just want to acknowledge you, the whole family. Beautiful family, it's good to have you with us, and I hope to greet you after our time as well. If there ever was a time that we needed to be courageous, it's right now. It is right now. The definition that I talk about, the word courage, is the attitude of facing and dealing with anything perceived as dangerous, difficult, or painful, or different, instead of withdrawing from it. This is a time for all of us to be courageous. We must also be confident in our walk, and we must be consistent in our walk as well. And so I want to take just about 25 minutes and speak from this thought, avoiding the I made a mistake trap. Avoiding the I made a mistake trap. Now, let me start out by saying you cannot live all of your life and not make a mistake. So I'm not talking about not making a mistake. I'm talking about the I made a mistake trap. That's what I need to hone in on and help us hopefully be able to recognize when we're falling into that trap. Okay? And so in my preparations, I went back to a book that I've shared on many times, and it's called The Dream Giver. It's called The Dream Giver. And the book, for those who may not be familiar with it, it's about a character named Ordinary who lives in the land of Familiar. He lives in Ordinary. He's Ordinary. He lives in the land of Familiar, and everybody in Familiar is a nobody. So everybody that lives in Familiar is a nobody, used to going about their ordinary life in the ordinary way. No ambitions, no desires, no passions, no dreams. But then one day, Ordinary finds this feather on his windowsill. When he finds that feather, he recognizes that the dream giver came and visited him. He starts to think, is it possible that I could have a dream, that I could be more than ordinary, a nobody in the land of Familiar? And so he begins to think about it. He talks to his father about it, and his father helps him to understand the dream giver did visit you. He did give you a dream. The father went on and confessed that he had a dream a long time ago. He said, but I kept waiting for the right time to fulfill that dream, and so eventually time went by and I never did. The feather that represented the dream giver coming to him just disintegrated. And so the father said to him, whatever you do, don't do like I did. Pursue it. And so there were certain dynamics, though, that Familiar had to overcome in his pursuit of the dream. He had to overcome those who said to him, you're a nobody like the rest of us. Who do you think you are? You need to stay right here in Familiar with everybody else, because no one ever really leaves Familiar. And if they do, they come back. And he's navigating through all these things. And he gets out to a certain point and he meets what's called the border bullies, the border bullies. When he meets those, some of those border bullies are family members who are concerned about him now wanting to be somebody when everybody's used to being nobody. And he's just ordinary. And so, his mother is there and his uncle is there, and his mother's speaking out of his concern. The uncle's speaking out of who do you think you are type of thing. His best friend was there worried about him and saying, Ordinary, come on, just come on back. Just come on back. And Ordinary listens to everybody, and then Ordinary begins to venture out anyway. At a certain point, he comes to an invisible wall. That invisible wall that he comes to is the wall of fear. And now he's got to navigate through the fear that he's feeling. And he's thinking to himself, you know, I really haven't gone too far with this. I haven't gone too far with this plan. I haven't gone too far with this vision. Maybe I can just back it up now. I can stop now. At least I tried. Anybody ever felt like, well, at least I tried? My God. I'm going to tell you something. There's a whole lot of stuff that just won't get done if we land in that place. At least I tried. And so Ordinary presses through the fear, and he begins to walk it out. Well, I'm just trying to give you a little bit of background that leads up to what I want to read. It's not very long. And it's the chapter, Ordinary Enters the Wasteland. Ordinary Enters the Wasteland. So listen to this. Ordinary slept deeply and woke up humming his unfamiliar tune. The fears of leaving his comfort zone were gone. His border bullies were behind him. His step was light as he traveled into the unknown. Around each bend, he expected to reach the land of promise. Let me say that again. Around each bend, he expected to reach the land of promise, where he would find his big dream. But he didn't. Instead, he soon found himself at the edge of a wide chasm. A haze obscured the view below. When he reached the bottom, he saw what lay ahead. And what he saw made his heart sink. He saw miles and miles of nothing but sand, rocks, and a few scraggly trees. He was standing on the edge of an empty wasteland. How could any wonderful dream live here? He thought. He wasn't sure, but the path continued on, curving away into the dreary distance, so he decided to go on. Ordinary walked and walked. Every time he got hungry, he opened his suitcase and ate. Every time he got thirsty, he opened it and drank. And every time he thought about his dream, he decided to keep going. Time passed. Ordinary skin burned. His feet blistered. His bones ached. One day blurred into another. And then one day he got hungry and opened his case and didn't find anything to eat. That was the day Ordinary began to worry. He called out to the dream giver for food, but he got no answer. 2 days later, he ran out of water. He called out to the dream giver. Again and again, he heard nothing. Fortunately, that was also the day that Ordinary managed to find a trickle of water coming from a rock. At least now, he was only starving. But if he was smart enough to find water, maybe he could find food too. Sure enough, it wasn't too long before he spotted a strange bush with some strange dessert fruit hanging from its branches. Ordinary tried one. It didn't taste sweet, but it didn't taste sour either. So he ate his fill. Still, the dream giver was nowhere in sight. More time passed. The longest hours and days Ordinary would ever remember passed. Desperately, he began to look for a way out. One day, he followed what looked like a shortcut over a ridge, but it led to a canyon and ended in quicksand. He tried traveling at night when it was cooler, but he kept losing the trail. Every delay made him more determined to find a quicker route. But every attempt only led to another dead end. Again and again, Ordinary lost his way. Again and again, he cried out to the dream giver to show him the way. But no answer came. Why had he ever trusted the dream giver to guide him in the first place? And so I want to end that part of the story because you see, the place where Ordinary had landed is in the place where many of us many times land in. And that is, I think I've made a mistake. I've made a mistake. And now what do I do? It's in Hebrews chapter 10. I quote this often because it's become a foundational scripture for me. I believe it needs to be foundational for you as well. It's Hebrews 10, starting at 32. It says, remember the early days after you had received the light and when you endured in great conflict full of suffering. It says, sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecutions, and other times you stood side by side with those who were so treated. You suffered along with those in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property because you knew that you yourselves had better long-lasting possessions. So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of the Father, you will receive the promise. For in just a little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous ones will live by faith and will not, and I will take no pleasure in the one who shrinks back. But we do not belong to those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who have faith and are saved. The writer of Hebrews, when he's writing there, he's addressing something to help the people who are now struggling with the decision that they've made, and now they're dealing with conflict. Now they're dealing with persecution. Now things aren't looking the way that they thought that they would look, and they're struggling. For many of them, I believe they landed in that "I made a mistake" trap. And I want to say to you that it is a place often where we can find ourselves that the enemy wants to capitalize off of in your life and in mine. Because the thing that he wants to do is to keep you from ever moving forward in completing and receiving all that God has for you. And so what he will do is he will take advantage of the process you're in that you don't understand. Let me say that again. He will take advantage of the processes you are in when you don't understand what's going on. Because in this place of I made a mistake trap, it comes out of oftentimes you and I being in a place where we just don't have all the information. Meaning we don't see clearly and know everything that's going on. It can happen out of misplaced expectation, meaning you expected it to go one way, Sean, but it goes another way. And as a result, hear me now, there are times when we make mistakes. Do not allow the enemy to capitalize off of that mistake. The trap that moves you and I into a place of distrust of God and moves us into a place of doubt concerning his heart for us or that which we believed he has spoken to us and called us to do. Ordinary, he starts out in the part I read, it says he was singing an unfamiliar song, meaning once he came through the fear, he landed in a real good place. Now he's singing a song that he's never sung before. But at the same time, now he finds himself in a process. Say a process. Now, excuse me. If there's one point that I'd really like to get across to us is you and I remaining open to how God has purposed to move in our lives, not just for our sake, but for the sake of others as well. You see, when you and I profess to be a Christian, when we profess to be a believer, you have to realize that there's some eyes on you. One rapper said, "All eyes on me," you know. Y'all know who I'm talking about. Yeah, all eyes on me. There are moments when there are people watching you based on your profession of your faith, your confession of your faith. Oh, really? Let's see. You see, there were those with ordinary that said, "You'll never be anybody. You'll always be ordinary. You'll always be a nobody." But he chose not to stay in that place. What I read to you, and if you read on through that book, and I encourage you to get it, it's called The Dream Giver. You can Google it and you'll find it. It's a wonderful story because he finally understands God's processes. He understands God's plan and how God wanted to work in his life. But in this place where he found himself, he thought that he was all alone. He thought he was abandoned. And there are seasons for all of us when we move out in God and we're excited about it. And then things start to happen, or things don't happen the way we thought they would. And then we find ourselves having to deal with, did I make a mistake? I might have made a mistake. If I made a mistake, then I need to accept I made the mistake. And in a moment, I'm going to give you 5 steps that help you work through the mistake and get back into the place of faith in God to continue to move forward. But let me just share with you in my journey, and this may resonate with some of you as well, from the vantage point of, in my heart of hearts, Sylvia, I'm an entrepreneur. I have learned to live and pursue what God has placed on the inside of me, and I've never been satisfied with someone telling me what I'm worth. That's just me. But there's a cost that comes with that. There's a price that comes with that. And I've paid that price. And by God's grace, and my family has paid that price with me. They've all navigated through various things as well. And by God's grace, I'm watching all of my children come into their own place in God, pursuing what God has put in their hearts to do. Limits have been taken off of them. One of my sons for my birthday sent me a spoon. The spoon that he sent me represented the spoon in the movie The Matrix, where Neo is seeing for the first time this little boy bend this spoon with his mind and Neo saying, "How did you do that?" And the little boy first says, "You must first recognize there is no spoon." And then he hands the spoon to Neo, and he bends it. "My son sent me a spoon, silver spoon, that has the little computer digital kind of things that you see, the 01, 01, 01 type thing. And in the middle of the spoon, it says, 'There is no spoon.' My son sends me that spoon, and he says, 'Thanks for getting me out.'" Thanks for getting me out of the matrix. Thanks for getting me out of small-minded thinking. Thanks. See, sometimes your life is not just about your life, it's about others as well. My prayer is that living my life, even with mistakes in my life, my kids will learn from those mistakes. They will not have to make those mistakes. But I've also learned that there's seasons when the enemy wants you to think you made a mistake so that, hear me now, so that you retreat. You see, in the story of Ordinary, he arrived at a place where he felt like God had abandoned him. He was thinking, "I made a mistake." And one of the things that happens when we feel like we've made a mistake, we start looking for not even a way to fix the mistake, but a way out. And one of the things that can harm us the most is for you to think it's a mistake, but it's right in the middle of what God intended all along. And so one of the things that I've learned to accept is even if my heart is pure in my intentions, God will work with it. He'll work with it anyway. But here's my point. Paul writes and says, "And we know that," Romans 8:28, "and we know that all things work together for good to them that love God and are the called according to his purpose." Simply meaning, if you get it right, he gonna handle it. If you don't get it right, he gonna handle it. Anywhere in between, he's handling it. And he's gonna use it for our good and for his glory. It doesn't mean that you and I don't have to work with some things, deal with some things. But I remember in my pursuit of God, my desire to step into a greater place of purpose and destiny, when the opportunity came for me to come off of my job working for the labor union, I share the testimony of how a very wealthy person sold into our ministry so I could come off of my job. I had the kind of rapport and relationship with my employer, my boss, that when I told him that I was going to resign, he said, "Hey, you know, I wish you well." He said, "Well, you're going to need an office." He said, "How about, what do you think about just working out of this office?" He said, "Now, what I'm willing to do is," he said, "hey, I'll figure out square footage of just the space that your space is." Now, we all worked in the same office, like cubicles. So if you can imagine this, he says to me, "Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to measure this off. However this factors into the rent we pay, then that will be your rent." So it might have been $25. I can't even remember what it was. It was a small amount. But that was his way of saying, "I want to help you, and you can stay right here, and you can bring in your own computer and set up, and you know, electricity's free." And so I took a 2-week vacation, took time off, came back in, and now I'm heading up Ayers International Ministries. Same office space. He's on the other side in his cubicle, and we're working. Now, yeah, praise God. Now, this lady had given a significant amount of money into for us to get going. It was the fulfillment of a prophetic word that said I would come off of my job and I wouldn't take a cut in pay. And that's exactly what happened. I would come off my job, move into full-time ministry, and you won't have to take a cut in pay. And so when those resources came in, I began to use those resources to accomplish certain things. One, we had I was finishing my first book, The Second Flood, The Discipline of Worship. So funds went to the publishing of that book. I was finishing a new recording at the time. So funds went to finish that. There was what I felt to be the need to make some various connections around the country with people that I knew. So I made some trips and things. Some of that money went for salary. and those kind of things. Well, that money in 6 months was gone. I don't think I squandered it, but it was gone. Now, there was others who thought you should have used it this way or that way. Well noted. But here I am. And when I arrived at that place, we didn't have a whole lot of other financial support coming in. The lady who had sold a significant amount of money, and I'm talking about well over $100,000, was gone. Just gone. And so at that moment, I'm faced with, and the thought is, now I'm talking about the I made a mistake trap. Because now I'm asking myself those kinds of questions. And when you arrive in that place, you want to be very, very, very prayerful. Because the moment, hear me now, the moment you move into you're caught in the I made a mistake trap, now you're listening, you're seeking answers. And I'm looking for answers, not opinions. Okay? Because everybody's got opinions, and I'm getting opinions. Well, you never should have came off that job. You know, well, you should have did this, you should have did that. Well noted. Okay. What I'm navigating through is, did I make a mistake? Because when you're in that frame of thinking and the enemy has you feeling like you've been entrapped, then opportunities will come up to get you to go backwards and not keep going forward. Now, you can take that same equation I just said, and you can apply that in any area of your life. You can apply it to marriage. You can apply it to relationships. You can apply it to your resources, your funds. How many of you have sown and given, and then you don't see the response that you thought you were going to see on your giving? Come on. You didn't see the harvest the way that you thought. And all of a sudden, did I make a mistake? Should I have held on to those funds? I'm talking about the I made a mistake trap. I'm talking about the times when you are stepping out in God, but it's not happening the way that you thought in the time frame that you thought it would happen. The way that you thought it would happen. And you start, well, maybe I made a mistake. No, maybe you just don't understand the processes yet. You don't have enough information yet. Sometimes the best thing you can do is get still, get somewhere, and get some revelation. I mean, sometimes we just need some things illuminated for us. God, if you just shine a light on this, if I can just see, oh, you know, one more, thy word is a lamp unto my feet, a light unto my path. All I need is one step at a time. I'm used to driving my car and hitting the high beams every now and then. But sometimes this walk of faith is one step at a time. It's one step at a time. Your word is a lamp unto my feet, a light unto my path. If you just help me to see one step at a time. And it was in that moment, in that place, and I'm challenged, I'm struggling, I'm trying to, you know, what do I say to my wife? What do I say to the kids? We're in this space, and that's when the word comes to me that I just shared with you out of Hebrews 10. Through two different individuals who had not talked to each other, all in the same day, one at lunchtime and one in the evening. I wasn't even asking them for their input. They said to me, hey, God gave me a word for you. Here's why God did that, because God knew where I was at. This boy's about to go back. Why? Because it was so convenient. My office was in the office I worked in the union. My boss, my previous boss, was on the other side of the cubicle. All I had to do was stand up to him and say, hey, Chuck, hey, listen, you know, this was a good run. You think I could get that job back? Now, let me tell you something. I knew I could get that job back. I knew that I could get it back. But there's something in me, and again, it costs greatly. But one of the things you got to know about me is I'm not a quitter. I'm not a quitter. If I believe God said it, I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to stick with it. And I've seen a whole lot of people come and go. It's been challenging around here. It is challenging around here. But I need to tell you with everything in me, I did not make a mistake. Now, I need that in your hearing. I need it in the hearing of Aaron's family that's listening. And I need most of all for the devil to understand, I did not make a mistake. You see, the thing that challenged ordinary in the story was that nothing seemed to make sense. He ran out of food. He ran out of water. Now, when you read on, I mean, it got worse for him. Sandstorms came in, blinding him. It says he had sand in his teeth, sand everywhere. Because this is part of the establishing of God's kingdom. And what we have to navigate through is avoiding the I made a mistake trap. And so rather than immediately accept the position back with the union, having gotten the word, do not throw away your confidence, which has great recompense of reward, but you have need of patience, need of perseverance, so that you've done the will of the Father, you might receive the promise. What I was hearing God say to me is, son, I need you to just, come on, I need you to stay with me on this, stay with me on this. Stay. I know it feels like you made a mistake. I know you think I made a mistake, but I need you to stay with me on this. I need you to stay with me on this. I need you to, there is no glory in shrinking back. There is no glory in drawing back. There is no victory in drawing back. It's not going to be easy, but I need you to stay with me, stay with me, stay with me, stay with me. And so that's what I did. And God placed individuals around me. I have one dear friend in Columbus, Ohio, and he said to me one day, he said, man, you either so far out of the will of God, or you about to see the greatest breakthrough you've ever seen. I mean, he was just saying, And he said, man, you're soaring. He said, and if it looks like you coming down, he said, I'm a stay up there. No, you ain't coming down. Stay up there. Stay up there. See, every now and then you need a few folk in your life to say, stay up there. Stay up there. No, you can land, but you don't want to land. You want to stay up there. You want to continue to soar. You want to continue to move out in what God has for you. And so it was a couple years that were challenging. And that which was a mistake, I owned as a mistake. I have no problem with saying I made a mistake, submitting that thing to God, repenting, asking forgiveness, should there need to be to ask forgiveness. I have no problem with that. My heart is broken before God. He knows that. But I've also learned to recognize that I made a mistake trap. The thing that you have pressed out in, believing God for, and then all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. Things don't look like they're coming together. And you start wondering, well, maybe I made a mistake on this. You know, these projections just aren't coming together the way that I thought that they would. It doesn't mean you made a mistake. It may mean that you're being more challenged now than you ever thought that you would be. It may mean that the stakes are higher. And I want you to understand, the greater the call, the greater the opposition that's going to hit your life, the greater the purpose, the greater the destiny, the greater the challenges that are going to hit your life, the greater impact you are to have in the kingdom of God and in the earth in which we live and on people's lives, the greater the opposition is going to come to you over and over and over. And you have to learn to discern between making a mistake and being in the mistake trap, because that trap is what the enemy wants you in, so he can get to your mind, get to your emotions, start shutting you down, and you start making decisions that moves you away from and outside of the processes that are ultimately leading you to your deliverance and your victory. Now I'm about done, and so let me just give you this passage of scripture that to me so wonderfully shows it. And I was testing this out on the worship team yesterday. Exodus 14. Exodus 14, starting at verse 1, says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. They are to encamp by the sea, directly opposite of Baal-Zephon. Says, Pharaoh will think." Come on, say that right there. Now say it again. Everybody say, "Pharaoh will think." Hear me now. There are times when God and I will direct you a certain way that has less to do about you and what he's trying to communicate to somebody else. You see, he says, "I want you to tell the people to go this way, because when you do that, Pharaoh will think." He's saying, "I need Pharaoh to think a certain way, so I need you to do this." Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed by the desert. Now, hear me, and I want to pause right here again. Don't allow yourself to get caught up in what people are thinking when you're walking out God's processes and you know that you are. People are going to think what they're going to think. One of the things that I had to navigate through was the fact that when I came off my job, there are people of thought, people thought he never should have done that. There are people that thought he's off. There are people that thought you need to repent and you need to get on back in there in that job and take care of your family. Now, again, I appreciate your perspective. And I'm not saying it was easy, but I'm telling you this. The things that I learned in that season are the reason why I can stand here and talk to you out of this place of authority right now. I got over a long time ago. I had to get over it, trying to please people. All of us, if we're not careful, can become susceptible to that. What are people thinking about me? 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 Listen, you will kill yourself in that place. What are people thinking about me? What are they thinking about this decision? What are they thinking about that? What are they thinking about me now? Because I told them this was going to happen and this isn't happening. What are they thinking about me? The place you want to be is, "Daddy, what are you thinking about me? Daddy, what are you thinking about me? This is my beloved son, in whom I'm well pleased." That's where you want to be. And that word settles every other opinion, every other observation that you might find yourself in. "This is my beloved daughter, in whom I'm well pleased." He says, tell the people to go this way, because Pharaoh will think that they're in confusion. He says, "And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord." I want you to recognize something else right about now. God is worthy of glory. God is worthy of glory. God is worthy of maximum glory. And sometimes it means you and I have to be willing to suffer a little longer, pursue a little more passionately, because he's going for maximum glory. He will allow things to look like it's just about to go under. You're about to go under. He's saying, but you're not going to go under. I'm just bringing this to a place of maximum glory. If you will stay with me in this process just a little longer, he says, you will see that there's a much greater glory that's going to be manifested. Not the glory that you want to give me, but the glory that I have desire to bring to myself. Just stay with me in the process. It's easy for us. I made a mistake, and I fall in the "I made a mistake" trap. And if I'm not careful in that, the moment I begin to think that way, and I think that way concerning God, meaning God, you tricked me. Anybody ever felt like God tricked you? Come on, be honest. I'm telling you, I have felt that numerous times, Sean. God, you've tricked me. And he says, well, yeah. I just didn't tell you the whole story. If I told you the whole story, if I told you what all the process would be, if I told you all the challenges that you would have to face on your way to purpose and destiny, you wouldn't do it. He said, but I'm working through you a process that's bringing you step by step into the reality of who I purpose for you to be. When we deal with the I made a mistake trap, if we're not careful, it moves us to begin to try to make decisions and come to conclusions that can cause us to never arrive in the place of God getting the glory out of our lives and establishing us where he has purposed to establish us. So God goes on and he says here in Exodus 14, a little further down, it says, when the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, what have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services. So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with them. He took 600 of his best chariots along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites, who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi Hahiroth, opposite Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, now listen to this, as Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us out to this desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone? Let us serve the Egyptians. It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than die in the desert. What's happening here? They have become ensnared in the I made a mistake trap. We made a mistake following you. We followed you and now look where we're at. It would have been better for us to stay in Egypt. It would have been better for us to stay on the corner of Crescentville and 747. It would have been better for us to stay on Princeton Road. But now you've got us out here. And I would be lying to you if I said to you that that trap has not tried to ensnare me. But I've already made my declaration. I want to make it one more time. I did not make a mistake. What Moses is navigating through, hear me now, what Moses is navigating through very quickly is now the people are against him. Now, it doesn't matter all that God did to bring them out. It doesn't matter that they're coming out wealthy. And sometimes we fall into that lapse as well. It doesn't matter that God has blessed you. It doesn't matter that God has delivered you over and over and over. It doesn't matter that God has continued to feed you, clothe you, keep you warm, make sure you get from point A to point B. It doesn't matter. And you arrive in a place where something hits your life. Something hits in such a challenging way. And you're dealing with, I made a mistake. I made a mistake. And if you made a mistake, repent. If you made a mistake, these are the steps that you want to take. Number one, you simply want to renew your trust in God. Renew your trust in God. I'm going to give them to you real quick. Renew your trust in God. Say that. Okay, I'm just telling Deborah's getting this for the first time too, so they're not going to be up there for a minute. Secondly, you've got to readjust. Readjust, meaning this. The moment that you recognize that it's not where you intended for it to be, you've got to readjust your thinking. You've got to readjust your paradigm. Thirdly, you've got to regain focus. Say regain focus. Come on, you got to regain focus. Let me go back. You got to renew trust because, listen to me, the I made a mistake trap is to cause you now to not trust God. The word of God says, trust the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding, your own understanding, your own way of thinking, your own way of processing, your own way of planning. Means you got at some point, you got to trust God even over and above all of that. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways, in all your ways, in all your ways, in all your ways, acknowledge him and he will direct your path. Simply meaning as you go along this journey, there's going to hit some points when you're not going to understand it. It's not going to make sense. You can't figure it out. You need to acknowledge God. You need to renew your trust in God. David said, I would have fainted except I believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. What he's saying is, I renewed my trust in God. You got to readjust. You got to readjust your thinking. You got to shift your paradigm to match what's happening. Thirdly, you regain focus. You regain your focus. You regain your focus first and foremost on God. Right now, as I'm finishing this book, same faith, same God, living in the realm of ridiculous faith. Pastor Deborah is working with me. She's a wonderful editor, writer herself. If you ever want to write a book, she's the lady to get with. And she's asking me questions that's helping me to be able to articulate what needs to be in the book. And one of the things that I shared with her, I said, yes, there has been times when I've had to refocus. Refocus. Refocus on God. How do you handle when things are going seemingly awry? How do you handle when you're dealing with something that hits your life that you didn't expect? It could be financial. It could be physical. It can be relational. How do you handle it? She's asking me these questions. How does this fit in to living in the realm of ridiculous faith? And I told her this. I said, every time for me, I've always retreated to that place of worship in God. Now, I thank God that I have the gift of music. And so I do sit and I will play. But there's times when I just get still. I retreat into his presence. It's not unlike what David did in 1 Samuel 30 at Ziklag. When David comes back home and realizes his kingdom has been burnt up. Family's gone. He comes back. I have to believe he's dealing with, did I make a mistake? Did I make a mistake by leaving them alone and not leaving some of the army with? Did I make a mistake by even going? I'll never forget when I moved my family to Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. I went before them to prepare the way for them. Our house was being built. The builder of our house had a house up the street. He said, I'll rent that house to you while your house is being built. I'm seeing God move. I'm seeing God move. And I call and I say, honey, okay, y'all can come on now. We got a place to stay till our house is done. And I never forget that first night when I got everybody together and said, come on, let's pray. And every last one of them started crying. And you know what my first thought was? Have I made a mistake? Have I made a mistake? Because it's real. But I didn't fall into I made a mistake trap like I need to get my family out of here and get back. I need to go back. I need to go back. No, I need to hear from God what he wants us to do now because we're here. I found that place of worship and I refocused. David found that place of worship and he refocused. And once he found that place and refocused, even in the midst of the men saying, we're going to stone you because you took us out to war and now all of our families are gone. It says he encouraged himself in the Lord. Then he said, bring me the ephod, which was the priestly garment that the priest would put on to seek God. And he asked a simple question, shall I pursue? And God said, pursue. For surely you will recover all. Regain focus and then recommit. Then recommit. Recommit. In this walk of faith, in this journey in God, there are times when we all will waver in our faith. And there's an opportunity to recommit. I'm still on board. I'm still going to see this thing through. I'm recommitting. And I want to tell you this, with the recommitting comes the grace for the recommitting. And lastly, then re-engage. Then re-engage. Renew trust in God. Readjust your paradigm, your thinking. Regain your focus. Recommit. And then re-engage. You see, Moses now is faced with the dilemma because what they're saying is, we made a mistake following you. I accept that there have been people in my world who said, we made a mistake following you, meaning following me. It just comes with leading. It's one of the dynamics that you must navigate through if you're going to be a leader. Because sometimes you get it right and sometimes you don't get it right. But as a man of God, as a man of faith, every decision I make, I intend to make it out of that place of prayer. And God is my witness. I trust him with my life and the life of my family. I trust him with this assignment. And I re-engage every day. I re-engage every day. My encouragement to you as I end out is the same encouragement that God gave to Moses, because Moses now is faced with the dilemma. He's trying to encourage the people. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. The Egyptians that you see today, this problem that you see today, the circumstances that you find yourself in today, you will see them no more. Once you get on the other side of this, you're going to be fine. Now, prophetically, and I'm paraphrasing when I say that, but here's the thing. The God that we serve wants to prove himself in our lives. The God that we serve wants to move in such incredible ways that there is no doubt what just happened. Only God could do it. And so when he says to Moses, why are you crying out to me? He didn't say, look out on the water and see the rowboats that are coming. He could have. He says, why are you crying out to me, Moses? Now, do you know why Moses is crying out? Because now he's dealing with the same dynamic of the people. Did I make a mistake? And God says, buddy, you take that rod in your hand and you stretch it out and part the water. He says, you handle your part, I'll handle mine. He says, you stretch out your rod and the people will walk through the Red Sea on dry ground. I will make Pharaoh come after you. And he and all his horsemen and chariots will be destroyed in the very sea by which I will deliver you. And that's exactly what happened. So I want to end out our time. I just want to pray right now.